You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and RadioReverb.com online. Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. On today's show, we feature a rundown of the latest news and talking points about living with HIV from the Brighton area and the world at large. Also, information on Brighton's HIV organisations and some other events. Do email us at hivhour@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at @HIV_hour and Instagram at @HIV_hour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on Monday and at noon on Tuesday, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com.
Welcome, everybody, to this HIV Hour.
Hello, everyone.
Tonight. Hi there.
Hey. Hi.
We've got a full house.
Yeah.
Tony's there.
I am.
Thanks for tuning in tonight. It's our second instalment of the World AIDS Day. Specials, aren't they, really? We're just doing one a week up until next week. How is everybody? Should we do a round robin?
Yeah, round. Dickie Bird.
How are you, Sue?
I'm fine. Yeah, you can imagine we're getting so busy with, you know, getting bright and ready, getting everything ready for, you know, what's going on and within the HIV sector. Yeah, it's been busy, exciting. We've got some really new, exciting things happening this year. So, yeah, been busy with work.
Yeah, it's not time of year, isn't it? Because all the decorations are like going from the shops and people's houses and people are getting ready for Christmas. But yet we've got World AIDS Day coming up on December 1st. Mm-hmm. And there's that sort of mixed, sort of almost like a contradiction of emotions and things, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I think actually, although December the 1st is quite a cold time to have World AIDS Day, it's quite nice to have it at the beginning of Advent, because I wear my red ribbon through the whole of Advent from December the 1st through to Christmas. So I always remember, so every single day through all the celebration things that you know we have learnt from people that we've lost.
Significant day. And yourself, Stephen, you weren't here last week. You were busy last week.
Yeah, I was busy. But like Sue, just lots going on. Lots of wearing lots of different hats for things at the moment. So sometimes I don't know what I'm doing or who I am or where I am, but yeah, I'm here today. So yeah.
Get a label like Paddington.
I know. I should tag myself.
Yeah. Please look after this bear.
Yeah.
I'm good.
How are you?
Yeah, just busy with work and busy. We're going to go over to Lunch Positive on Sunday. We're taking quite a few people from the Worthing Hub. So, yeah, that'd be good.
Oh, brilliant. Good.
Yeah. It's the World AIDS Day Sunday lunch.
Oh, yes.
We've got the speaker there. So, yeah, it's going to be good. Yeah, so been keeping out of trouble. What about you, Mr. Josh?
I'm all right. Not too bad. Going to the Beaver Conference on Friday to speak about my posterior. I mentioned my posterior. I got it in there today. There's a tube strike on Friday, so I'll be interested to see if I get there on time. But I think I'll be all right. We'll see.
Yeah.
But
you go there for the whole day, Josh?
I'm going to spend the whole day there. So who knows? I'm going to.
Because they've got an evening event in the evening.
I'm going to do a bit of that, yeah. I'm going to come back Friday night with the people from Lawson Unit.
Sure.
I'm going to talk. I've talked about the HIV Hour because that's what they're going to ask me about, why I did the injectables, and that's one of the main reasons why I did it. So yeah, it's only a 4-minute talk in the morning, so I'm there to enjoy the rest.
Yeah, lovely.
Hopefully.
Right. Well, I've never been to the Beaver Conference before, so it should be.
No, I haven't. No.
Yeah. Good news from for the show and things.
I'll be there in the evening, Josh, singing with Joyful Boys.
What time's that?
I think it's about 6 o'clock. It's later on in the evening, so yeah.
I'll see you then. Brilliant. So, shall we get on with the show? What's on today's show, Sue?
Oh, I'll tell you what, we got a gem. We got a gem. We have always had gems on the show, but we got a bit of a gem. we've got a bit of an extraordinary gem. His name is Panksepp. He's just recently become a positive voice speaker for the Terence Higgins Trust. But he, like you, Stephen, he wears so many hats. He does a lot of work for Positive East. He does a lot of mentoring. He does phenomenal work in prisons.
And, oh, brilliant.
Yeah, and he tells his story from being an inmate or, you know, part of the prison system, being positive, and his story from that, and how, from that experience, how he's gone on to really, you know, make a difference. And when you hear him talk, he is made and is making, you know, a difference. Because when we talk about HIV, guys, don't we, it's inclusive, it's for everybody. Information about HIV stigma, and you know, everyone should, doesn't matter whether you're in the prison system, doesn't matter whether you've just come into this country, it's literally, and he is really setting precedence. And and it was such a joy. I'm going to be doing a lot of work with Pank over at World AIDS, and it was such a joy to get him on the show. And and he just quickly wanted to say he's obviously, he's doing the Red Run in Victoria Park with Positive East on is it this weekend, isn't it? It's this Sunday, I think it is.
Oh, fab. Oh, brilliant.
I believe so. And just said, you know, if anyone wants to come along, and, you know, I know a few other people I know that are doing it as well, but he just, like, so many hats, yeah.
That's in London, is it, Sue?
Yes, it is. London. Sorry, yes, it's in London. Yes, and it's put on by Positive East, which Pank is also part of. So,
great. And then we'll have we're going to get all what's on at World AIDS Day leading up to it. So we've got a big bumper pack of events that's coming up next week and the week after. So, shall we get on with it?
Shall we?
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
Hi, if you've just tuned in, this is the HIVR on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and .com online. You can always get us on our famous podcast. We have such a treat for you today. I've got a wonderful, inspiring person I'm going to be chatting to today. And I'm not going to be doing too much talking because I think my guest is going to literally fill the next bit of space with some fabulous information, stories. So great. I want you to meet him. He's Panksepp. Welcome, Pank, to the HIV Hour. How are you?
Thank you very much for having me. I am very, very well. Thank you.
So, you know what, like I said in introducing you, I'm just going to let you take it away. I mean, just tell us a bit about yourself, Pank. You know, I've asked you to come on today, but I know you've got so much stuff. You, in fact, you could probably take up a couple of hours with the stuff you could be talking about. But we've got a limited time, but I'm sure you're going to get as much in as possible. I mean, I'm just going to take it over to you, Pank. You know, how are you? And let's kick it up. Let's start it off.
You're too kind with your words, truly. But okay, so where should we begin? I guess a great space to begin is at the beginning. As you very kindly introduced me, my name is Pank. I have been living with HIV since 2010. I was diagnosed late, and as a result, was very, very ill. You know, was very poorly. But over the years, I have got better with medication. I am stable. I am undetectable, and I am healthier, I think, now than I've ever been. In terms of my story, though, I suppose one of the interesting things is the fact that I am an Asian man. And with that, there are challenges that you have culturally, and certainly when it comes to the topic of HIV and sexual health in general. I have been quite lucky sort of with my upbringing, and that my parents were and are, you know, sort of very progressive and very supportive. And so In terms of that nurturing and that supporting environment that most of us crave, I was very lucky to have that growing up, and I never felt anything other than love from them. Because of that, I've always had a very open relationship with them, and I've always been very honest in terms of telling them whatever it is that they need to know. And I knew that I could do that with my own HIV status. And when I thought about it, though, it was something that I didn't want to tell them immediately, probably because I needed to digest it myself. I needed to understand it myself. And whilst it didn't, I wasn't perhaps as worried or as scared about my diagnosis when I had it, simply because I had been surrounded by people that had been living with it for years. Mm-hmm. So I knew that it could be something that was easily sort of maintained and didn't have to make a difference. It was something that I knew that obviously if I told my family, that they would worry and panic about, regardless of what I told them. So, you know, I felt it would be better to get to a point where I was healthier, where I was undetectable, and where I could say, this is under control. As that time went on, it was something that I decided that I didn't necessarily want to tell them there and then, because I felt, you know, like most mothers would, it doesn't matter what you say, they're always going to think that you're their baby and that they are always going to worry. So was this something that I was going to unnecessarily worry them about when I had it under control? So I decided not to say something. I then went to prison, something that I didn't expect to happen. And with that come challenges. And, you know, there is an understanding that I think most people have, you know, before they go into prison, that it's not a nice place. The people that identify as LGBTQ, you know, sort of struggle, certainly to admit that you were positive or that you were living with HIV would be something that would be discouraged, or certainly would be a barrier in some way. And whilst I wasn't prepared to hide who I was as an individual and didn't feel that I needed to, I wasn't going to advertise it. You know, if somebody asked me, I'd be honest, but I wasn't going to walk around and tell people. And that was certainly the same with my status. The very first day that when I arrived at that prison and was checked in at the reception desk, I had to have a conversation with the nurse in front of all these other people that were there. And she asked me what medication I was on and what it was for. So I had to inadvertently disclose my status in front of all these people on day one. And that continued every day when I had to go up to the medical hatch to get my medication. And every day I was asked the same thing. What's your name? What medication are you on? You know, why do you need it? And so I would have to disclose every day in front of prisoners what medication I was taking, why, and what it was for. And no doubt, of course, it wasn't very long before that news spread. And suddenly, you know, the way that people look at you and the way that they react towards you changes. And it did change. And it was challenging. You know, whilst I wasn't bullied directly to my face, it's the comments, the snidey little remarks that are made, you know, as you're walking by, you know, so the discriminatory remarks that are said, you know, they're hurtful. They are hurtful. Mm-hmm. And I'm someone that's quite strong and I really don't care what other people think about me, but you can't help but be affected by that.
We're human beings at the end of the day.
Absolutely. You know, you can't help but be affected when somebody comes up to you in the dining room in front of everyone and says, do you have AIDS? And, you know, sort of, or when you sit down, they all get up and move somewhere else. You know, you can't help but be affected by that. And then when I was approached by one of the governors and told that there was intelligence, that there was a real threat to my life. And what did I want to do? Did I want to be moved to a different prison? I had a choice, you know, and my choice was that I didn't want to go anywhere else. I liked where I was. I liked the job that I had. I was teaching many of these other prisoners, my peers, how sort of English and maths, you know, functional skills, you know, and GCSE, so that they could go on and be to people. And I liked that job. I really did. You know, I liked being a Shannon Trust mentor. I liked being an education mentor. I liked being an induction mentor and actually helping people when they first came into prison to settle. And so to have to move somewhere else and start all over again was something that I really wanted to avoid. And, you know, and I just thought, well, and even if I do, it will just start all over again. And so is it not better than, you know, sort of rather than moving, stand there and just say, right, let me educate you. And so that's what I did. Put them in a room, had a chat with them, educated them, explained to them, you know, what they needed to know, because clearly their understanding was that of what we would have expected back in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
You know, sort of, and... And it's unacceptable. And so, you know, so once I'd educated them, I saw that their attitudes changed. They were suddenly supportive. They were understanding. And they all apologized for their behavior. And wow. Clearly, something profound had happened. Mm-hmm. And rather than just let that go by and just say, okay, yeah, that was great. I don't have to worry anymore. I went to the governor and said, something special happened. And this is something that you should actually build on. She agreed, and we decided that we would create a well-being event where we could actually educate the wider population around sexual health and HIV. I then moved to a different prison before that because I'd gained my recategorization, so I was able to go to an open prison and then start my visits home. But I was brought back to that prison to do that well-being event, you know, where I got to walk through the visitor's entrance. Wow. You know, and I got to travel unescorted to that event, and actually be treated like a human being rather than a prisoner, and mm-hmm. and take part in that event and do what I was there to do, and that was to educate. And I realized that this was something that could be done further. So when I was released, I decided that this is what I wanted to do. You know, now I'd worked as a photographer before that, before I went to prison, and I was successful. Okay. I was successful. I was, you know, I had a great time doing it. I had great clients and, you know, traveled the world. It was brilliant and I loved it. Wow. But this was something that felt suddenly a bit more important. Mm-hmm. And so I rode the coattails of the Hep C Trust, who would go into prisons and educate about Hep C. I would then go in with them and I would educate about HIV. And I got to travel to various different prisons and, you know, have access to those prisons as a prisoner, you know, mm-hmm. so an ex-prisoner, sorry, that had only just come out of prison to get access into a prison, to be cleared to go into that prison, you know, it's a big deal. And so, mm-hmm. you know, the fact that I was able to do that meant something, but it also meant that I was able to actually spread real information, true information, mm-hmm. to a population that had this skewed view of what it was to be living with HIV and what it meant. And I saw that was successful, and it just got bigger and bigger, and I started to do it across the entire prison estate at as many prisons as I could up and down the mm-hmm. country. And you could see that it had the effect that we would want it to have. Mm-hmm. People understood, they changed their minds, they were more supportive, and people then living with HIV felt more secure, they felt less afraid, and they felt mm-hmm. more supported. And some of the responses and the letters that we got as a result, were just incredible, you know, sort of thanking us for the fact that they now felt as though they had a voice at a time that didn't.
Yeah. Could I just ask you something? I mean, it's really interesting to know, because a lot of the work that I do in schools, we tend to think that or see and visualize that young people are getting the information. The work that you would then started doing in the prison system, were you finding it was the younger inmates were more sort of plausible to the information, or the older generation?
It's interesting, sort of, because you would think, you know, I mean, you would expect somebody to have, you know, the views that they had and this mentality that, you know, that we would have seen 40 years ago.
Yeah.
You would have expected that if they'd been in prison the entire time and had any exposure to the outside world.
Yeah.
But the reality is, you know, you have officers and staff that come in and out of the hospital that live in the real world, you know, rather than live in the prison. You have prisoners that come in and out, you know, that haven't spent 40 years behind bars, uh-huh. and would have been exposed to you know, sort of what HIV or what it is to be, you know, sort of living with HIV in today's world. Mm-hmm. The advancements in medicine, all of that, you know, sort of PrEP and PEP and mm-hmm. the lot. Sort of, you would have expected them to know that or be exposed to that and therefore bring it into the prison.
Yeah.
And it just get filtered through, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's almost like that anything that you are exposed to and understand before you go to prison, mm-hmm. it's like it gets wiped the moment you set foot across that threshold.
Right.
I suppose it's that mob mentality, you know, sort of you follow the crowd.
Yeah.
If one person believes that it is bad or that it is dirty or that it is gay, then that's what everyone will believe. And that's really what the issue was. You know, sort of so many people, when I'd asked them, have they had an HIV test? Mm-hmm. Many of them would say yes, and many of them would say no. When I'd asked one of them that had said no, why, you know, you get the shrug of the shoulders and they'd just say, because I'm not gay. And it's still perceived as that.
Yeah.
But of course, we know the reality is that, the, you know, it's the first time in its in the last 40 years that the number of new cases, you know, sort of in heterosexual men and women has
absolutely surpassed LGBT.
Yeah. And so it's really interesting that that's still seen like that. And I'm sure that most of them, you know, in the real world wouldn't necessarily think that, but they do suddenly when they go into prison. But that's what that's why it's so important to, for me to be able to go in there and actually educate them, because of course that has to change if we want to reach those targets that are set out, you know, for 2030. Mm-hmm. We have to include an entire population, you know, so for that entire population includes
everyone's inclusive, prison, regardless whether you're in the prison
system.
Absolutely.
And so you know, so and by doing that, by going into prisons, I then sort of was exposed more to everything around HIV and sexual health. I was asked to become the patient representative and co-author the new guidelines for management for the delivery of healthcare services and sexual health services in prisons for the British Association of Sexual Health and HIV. That then led on to being asked to be the patient representative for the new monkeypox vaccine. I was offered offered a seat on the special interest group for the prisons, you know, sexual health, where I get to directly influence what happens in sexual health and HIV in prisons. And it exposed me to THT, to become a positive voices speaker,
right.
To do workshops around stigma empowerment, and workshops around, you know, for the newly diagnosed. All of these things that sort of that I suddenly started to do that were all within the field of sexual health and HIV, and at a time when I never thought that I would ever be doing anything like that. You know, sort of it's been a complete game changer. You know, sort of as a result of engaging sort of with THD and doing these various little bits and bobs, I was able to then meet Eugene, and we have started doing pilots around prisons, you know, kind of around the country, looking at how we can create a peer-led program that will that we can roll out across every single prison, where prisoners will educate other prisoners around HIV and have that in every single prison, both male and female, so that there is a constant reminder that this is something that we can talk about, we should talk about, so that it can be normalized. And if it's normalized, we get rid of that stigma. And if we get rid of the stigma, then we've got a chance of reaching those targets for 2030. So it's, you know, for me, this is a really important thing to be able to do. It's been my life for the last 5 years within that prison setting, but then bringing it back out into the community, like that wasn't enough. I decided that I was offered a role to become the GMI partnership manager at Positive East, and that's what I've been doing. That's what I do for a part of the week. And, you know, and my entire life has just been immersed into the world of sexual health and HIV. And for the first time in the 50 years that I've been alive, I can truly say that I'm where I'm supposed to be. I'm doing what I was always supposed to have done. And I'm doing something that I know makes a difference. It has made a difference, is making a difference, and will continue to make a difference. And where I know I can leave a legacy that I would be really proud of, regardless of how long I do it for, it's a legacy that I know I've done and that I will be remembered for. And that's enough. For me, that's enough.
Do you sometimes, really, I mean, do you sometimes, when you're sitting there drinking your coffee or what have you, and thinking, has that really happened? What was that? Because you literally, you know, you were instrumental for change of what, you know, in the last few years. I mean, do you sometimes, Pank, have to pinch yourself, you know, oh my goodness.
I do. When sort of things happen that I know are a big deal, you know, sort of that's when I kind of think, oh my God, you know, sort of I was part of making that happen.
Yeah.
And you, especially when it comes to the prison service, it's notoriously difficult to do anything within prisons. It's such a secretive sort of organization.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think we know more about the Illuminati than we do actually about what happens in prisons.
Yeah.
And so to be able to make those changes, to get in front of someone, you know, sort of that has the ability to make that change, and to have time with them, or to be able to influence them, is a big deal. So yeah, so when I, you know, when I was asked to co-author the guidelines, you know, these guidelines are basically the Bible that are, that is used within the prison service. You know, this is what, how you do, or this is how you conduct healthcare. These are the things that we would suggest you follow. It's not policy, but they are obviously recommendations. And so they're the things, you know, that's the little Bible that they would follow. I mean, when I was doing interviews within prisons, and talking to whether it was clinicians and medical staff or to prisoners that were living with HIV for a research project, you know, they would refer to the BASH guidelines as those they would, you know, they would work from. So to be able to influence that and to know that you've played a part on in how they will look for the next 10 years, and the fact that these guidelines are used by about 10 or 12 different countries that don't have their own guidelines, that and perhaps don't have the same level of understanding around sexual health and HIV than we do, to know that those guidelines that I've created or helped create will be used in those countries, you know, it's a, you know, I have to pinch myself because you just think that's huge. You know, sort of, and to, you know, to be offered a seat, you know, on the prison SIG. I mean, there are like 40 people, and I'm, you know, they're all a consultant in this or a consultant in that or a medical expert in this. And then there's little old Pank, you know, just sitting there.
You know, I've got this impression, Pank, you're a bit of a mover and a shaker by the sounds of things. Are you proud of that?
I am. I mean, you know, I try to be, you know, I've always said, you know, and I, you know, and I know we were discussing it before, you know, my greatest strength is the fact that I am a disruptor. I have no problem in disrupting the status quo if I believe it's for the greater good. And sometimes we have to, you know, sort of, we all get stagnant if we just, you know, kind of keep things the way that they are. And if we don't actually push ourselves, if we don't, you know, so if we don't actually overcome that fear to try something different, nothing ever changes. You know, so we'd still think the world was flat. We wouldn't, you know, if Marie Curie hadn't played around with radioactive elements, you know, sort of, we wouldn't have had X-rays. You know, there are so many points in history where change has happened because somebody actually stood up and just said, actually, about this, or why don't we try it like that, or how about this, or just question, you know, what is the status quo, you know, sort of, and that's all I do. I don't force my agenda on anyone, but what I will do is invite them to actually think about what it is asking them, and what I'm asking them is usually a question that will be, you know, or that can have different answers, you know, sort of, and that's how we learn. I want to continue learning. I know I might be referred to as the leading expert in HIV in prisons, but I know that there's a hell of a lot about HIV that I still need to learn. And I learn that every single day by talking to my peers, talking to people like you know, sort of, and having these conversations. And if you have that conversation, naturally, your understanding of something will increase. And when it increases, and we're armed with that, that's when we can change the world. You know, we can't change it unless we understand it first.
Exactly.
And that's what I want to do.
What I'd like to ask you, I mean, maybe people that may be entering the prison system or already in the prison system that maybe are living with HIV and have maybe gone through some of the things that you have gone through, what advice would you give for them at this moment? What would you say to them?
I think prison is a very, it can be a hard place to sort of to navigate, you know, sort of when you're in it. And it can become even harder if you're not authentic self. Now, yes, okay, it can be scary thinking about how someone may react to, you know, your diagnosis if they find out. But that doesn't mean that we should shy away from it. You know, if they do, stand in your truth, stand in your ground. At the end of the day, you know that you are no threat to anyone. And it's up to us, though, you know, sort of, and those that are living with it, to ensure that everyone understands that we are not a threat. We can't rely on other people to do that for us. And if we do it ourselves, not only is that empowering, not only does that actually mean that we take back that control, but it means then that as a unit, when we all stand up and we're all doing the same thing, that's when we actually have that collective voice that then, you know, sort of can be heard. I, you know, the company that I set up, you know, which is called the CI Squared Bureau, is called that because the CI Squared stands for the Collective Intelligence Index. And the Collective Intelligence Index is an equation where it maps out and works out the optimum number of individuals required to bring around social change. Mm-hmm. So anyone that engages with the CI Square Bureau becomes part of that collective, becomes part of that hive. Mm-hmm. And it's that collective knowledge, understanding, and experience that we can then use to create, you know, sort of and bring around that social change and what we want to see in the world. You know, so you know, I encourage anyone that's going into mm-hmm. prison to stand up, be that voice, be part yeah. of that collective. You know, come and be welcomed into that hive. That uh-huh. living with HIV means that we're part of a very unique family.
Yeah.
You know, there's only 100,000 of us in the country that mm-hmm. that are part of that family, and of a population of 63 million mm-hmm. is quite tiny.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful family, and mm-hmm. it's a supportive mm-hmm. family, and it's one that actually matters and one that counts. Mm-hmm. And we know that.
Yeah.
We just have to make sure that everybody else knows that, and not by shoving it down their throats, not by being that kind of activist, but we are everyday activists. Everyday yeah. activists mm-hmm. are people that stand there and say, you know what? I do matter. I have yeah. a place in history. Absolutely. And I'm taking it. You know, yeah. I'm standing up and I'm carving my path. And you will listen, because you won't mm-hmm. have a choice but to listen yeah. and to understand. You know, mm-hmm. and if we all do that, we all live in a better place. And yeah. if we can help one person a day to do that, mm-hmm. think of how different the world would be. You know, literally, I wake up every single day so happy with what I do. If I can help one person a day feel half as happy, mm-hmm. and they did that for someone, and they did that for someone, this place would just be incredible. It really would. That's the world that I want to live in. That's the world that I want to leave for my niece and for others. You know, mm-hmm. that's the world that I think we can achieve. Mm-hmm. But we have to stand up and do it now. We all have to stand. We all have to understand that we have a role to play. And I know what I, for the first time in my life, I know what my role is. Mm-hmm. And now that I've realized it, I love every second of it. I'm really
on the same page of what you've just said. Personally, for my own self, my family say to me, "Haven't you done enough for the cause? Haven't you done your bit?" And they just laugh at me because they know what I'm
going to
say. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. You know, kind of. I mean, I love my dad to death. You know, he's the tiniest little man ever, and I love him. He's so squidgy. And but he many times he said to me, "Look, you know, one person can't make a difference." And it's like, you know, kind of listening. And I always say to him, and the analogy that I use is, you know, think of a mosquito, this tiny little thing that we can barely see with our eyes, mm-hmm. that buzzes around in the middle of the night, that keeps us awake all night, that can bite us and that can actually give us malaria. This one tiny insignificant thing mm-hmm. has changed your life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sort of, and so don't tell me that something small can't make a difference. It can. Mm-hmm. Be an irritant. That's what we have to be. We have to be irritants. You know, so if we're irritants, we can actually make a change. One fax that was sent to a baby food manufacturing company in 1919 in Atlanta, and all it said in that fax was, "Could you please tell me how much of your product contains genetically modified ingredients?" That one fax was enough for them to remove all the GM products from their food mm-hmm. because they were scared of what would happen if they didn't. One fax, one piece of paper. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, tiny little things that we don't think are important mm-hmm. make a massive difference. Yeah. And our voices are the most powerful things on the planet. Mm-hmm. You know, above everything else, they are the most powerful things on the planet. And if we all stood up and we all used it, mm-hmm. you know, what we would have is greater than any atomic bomb that could ever possibly be created. That is power. That is the world that I want to live in, where we take that control mm-hmm. back, where we say, you know what? It's about us. We want to ensure our future and our children's futures and our children's Absolutely. Children's futures mm-hmm. are exactly what it should be. Mm-hmm. So because we know what it should be.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, but I think you've more or less answered my last question. I was going to ask you, what next for Pank? But I mean, I think you've just reeled off a few things, haven't you?
I'd like to think eventually it'll end with me being, you know, president of the world. No, it'd be a, you know, dictatorship. But, you know, I mean, of course, that's not going to happen. Well, you know, you never know. It might. But no, I think for me, as long as, do you know that there is, there for the first time, actually, you know, in a long time, whilst uh-huh. there is a plan where I can see, obviously, where I'm going and what I want to achieve, there isn't a set goal in terms of where I want my life to be. There are set goals in what I want to see change and want to see happen, but it doesn't necessarily fit with where I want to be, because suddenly for the first time in my life, that doesn't actually seem as important. What's more important is making sure that individuals, for example, that are going into the prison system don't have the same concerns that I did, that they don't have to feel alienated, that they don't have to feel alone, and they feel represented, supported, and safe. That's more important than where I want to be in 10 years' time. Making sure that the individuals, you know, don't ever feel that the only choice that they have is to kill themselves because they don't have the support that they would need from their either their families or their friends when it comes to their diagnosis. That's more important than where I'm going to be in 10 years. You know, so it's not so much where I want to be, it's what do I want to see changed in that
time. And do you know what? I've just got this feeling, I think you've already made change, but, you know, for people entering this the prison system now, they may see some change and you know,
I hope so.
Of what you've been doing for the last few years, you know. So
and you have some wonderful, wonderful staff, some nursing staff, clinical staff, who are so supportive and who are amazing, and they should be applauded and they should be used as great examples and the gold standard of how it should be done. Unfortunately, not every prison has a dedicated sexual health nurse. And that's then where you have an issue, because, of course, if you're just a general nurse, I shouldn't just say just a general nurse. If you're a general nurse, you don't necessarily have the understanding of the nuances that are required to help somebody that is living with HIV. The understanding that they may have different nutritional requirements, for example. But, you know, the whole thing of not missing doses of medication and the implications of that. There are so many little parts that aren't understood. And I think if I can help them understand that, then it will change, because not only does that breed empathy and understanding amongst those individuals, but it also means that those that are living with it feel a lot more supported and safe. And it breaks down that stigma. It's all about breaking down stigma. You know, if we are so tantalizingly close to becoming the first city on the planet that can reach zero new cases by 2030.
That'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it? I mean, you know, is that not something that we would want for our country to be the first country that does that? And I want to be a part of that. I want us all to celebrate that. But in order to have that happen, we have to get rid of stigma. And it is all about stigma. That's where we should be focusing. That's what we should be looking at in breaking down. You know, sort of, and if we can do that, then we can get it done.
Do you know what, Pank? We could continue talking for another hour or so, but unfortunately we can't. I just really want to thank you for coming on to the HIV Hour. The work you're doing is phenomenal. And you know what? You have made a change, and you will make a change, you know, for all the things that you're doing and all the work you're doing in the community. So we at the HIV, I just want to say thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's been a joy. I hope that I have been able to help somebody that's struggling understand things a little bit better, maybe that's facing prison and knowing that they can actually get through it and it will be okay, and that there are people to support them. And in a huge sort of, and I hope that you know, sort of I've made a difference just by you being so kind and having me on the show. You know, sort of what you do is incredible. What you do is important. I am your biggest supporter, your biggest advocate. I truly, truly, truly am happy to come back at any time. What you guys do is incredible. Please. You know, the HIV Hour, positively helping to change hearts and minds. That's what it's all about.
Thank you so much, Pat. You take care, won't you?
You too. Thank you so much.
Radio Reverb.
Radio Reverb.
Everybody, welcome back to the HIV Hour. And now we're going to go into community news.
Yeah, brilliant. So that was an amazing interview, wasn't it, with Hank? By the way, in depth. Thought-provoking and humbling.
He said he wants to come on again, so he didn't wait for me to ask him, so that was good.
That's what we like.
So what's everyone doing for World AIDS Day then? What are you doing, Stephen? What's happening in London? Is there a few things happening?
So to be honest, I'm not going to be going to any of the events this year, just because I'm so busy with talks for Terence Higgins Trust. So I'm going to be at a school that I've been at before, the Brit School, most of World AIDS Day during the day, and then going over to do another talk in the centre of town later on that day. So it's full throttle for us at Terence Higgins Trust, isn't it? So we're on overdrive, just not only on World AIDS Day, but the run up to World AIDS Day and after World AIDS Day as well, but it's just mega busy. So I'm not sure about events this year in London, but there will be. There's always things being put on, which is good.
I think there's a lot more on. Is there a lot more on this year? It seems like there is. I don't know whether because of COVID, maybe. Yeah. Seems to be a lot more. About in Worthing, Tony, West Sussex.
I don't think there's much going on, but I'm going to come over to Brighton for the vigil. So,
lovely.
First time.
That'd be nice to see you, Tony. Mm-hmm.
So, should we get on with some community news? Firstly, I just want to say that Birmingham, I've got, because we're going to have them on the show, they were going to come on the show, but I think we'll have to get them for another time. They've got a memorial, a new World AIDS Day memorial. We're going to start. Yeah, the ribbons. It's going to be unveiled on World AIDS Day. And it'll focus on it's the focal point for remembering those who lost to the virus, educating people about today's reality of effective medication and normal life expectancies. So I think we'll do the story maybe another time, because it's obviously we've got a lot to go through. But that's called the Ribbons, and that's Thursday the 1st of December, 6 p.m. at the Hippodrome Square in Birmingham. So go and check that out, because I think we've done a lot of hard work to get it up and running. Yeah. So you're doing something, aren't you, Sue?
Yes, I'm actually doing something this Sunday, that's Sunday the 27th. I'm doing a very special talk to do with the Brighton HIV History Club. And I'm going to do something quite special. And just to give you a pointer, guys, I'm doing my story, but in pictures. And one of the pictures I'm using is one for from the HIV Hour, our show. I've got all our pictures there.
Oh, brilliant.
That's part of my activism and campaigning bit I'm doing. So so if anyone still wants to get tickets, we may have some left. I know they go pretty quickly. It's from 3 o'clock till 5 o'clock, and so there may be some ticket. I think the £3, but I mean, there may be still some available, but it's normally a packed out event, so looking forward to that.
And that's at the Brighton Museum, isn't it? Sorry.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we've got a lot of Alf LaFleurig's going to be talking as well, isn't he, about Brighton in the 1982 and the history of HIV and AIDS. So that, and also I think they've got is it the vicar, Heather Leake Date, is it? So
that's she's right.
Talking
yes.
about yeah.
Ah. Okay, lovely.
So she's doing a talk as well. So I might end up down there. Are you going there, David?
So I was talking to Heather earlier on today, and you can still add names to the list of names that are read out at the candlelight vigil if you wish to. So you could email her, because she's the HIV chaplain. So you could email the names of the people that you're remembering. And the email address is sushivchap@gmail.com. And that's SUSS. HIVCAP@gmail.com.
Brilliant. Fabulous. So what I'll do is I'll just go through some other events that's going on. So I think you mentioned this earlier, Tony. On Sunday, November 27th from 1 p.m, Lunch Positive are doing a community lunch. So that's open to everyone. So if you want to go down there, that's at the Dorset Methodist Church, isn't it, in Brighton?
It is, doors open at 12:30 and lunch is from 1. So it'd be good.
That should be a good event. What else is on? So at Charles Street Tap, they're doing a World AIDS Day annual cabaret fundraiser for THT South, and that's hosted by Drag With No Name, who's great. That's Wednesday the 30th of November from 8 p.m. So head on down there. That's the day before, isn't it? So that's a good one to go to. We've got a lot of acts on there as well, a lot of cabaret. So that's good. And then it's going to be World AIDS Day. We obviously got the vigil, which is at Newstein Gardens, and that starts at 6 p.m. with the candlelit vigil and then the reading of the names. And then on the same night, at Centre Stage, it's Rock the Ribbon. And they've got Angie Brown singing, Stephen.
Oh,
you know Angie Brown, don't you?
She's
So she's be singing, and Dave Lynn, and that's at that's in the head of Sussex Beacon as well. So there's no fee. You just have to put money into the buckets, I think. And that's 7 PM till late, and that's on the 1st of December. And that's at Centre Stage, 11 Marine Parade in Brighton. So if you want to look online, that's www.centrestagebrighton.com. So that sounds good, doesn't it? With Andy Brown, more drag queens.
Loving that.
And then it's something in my local area I found. In Peacehaven, don't you know? Would you believe it?
No.
So there's a pub down the road called The Avenue, and they're going red on Thursday on the World AIDS Day. So you can join them to raise money for the National AIDS Trust and Sussex Beacon. So they'll have a raffle with a range of amazing prizes. All the proceeds going to their charities. So that's National AIDS Trust and Sussex Beacon. So go down there, and that's The Avenue on in Peacehaven.
So. Or like a raffle.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we all like a raffle. The last thing, I'm sure there's other things going on, but on Sunday, December the 4th at 6 PM is the World AIDS Day Service of Remembrance and Hope at Dorset Gardens Methodist Church, where Lunch Positive is. Everyone's welcome. So that's on at December the 4th, Sunday, 6 PM.
Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to say to everybody to get your red ribbons.
Yes.
We wear the red ribbon to remember people, and it's really important. It's lovely to, I love seeing people with red ribbons on. I always think, there's other people out there working for the same cause. So, great to see people with the ribbons on.
Raises awareness, doesn't it?
Yeah,
as well,
I was giving them out at schools today as well, which, and they'll put the big ribbons on, which is quite good. Nice, good.
That's great.
We'll see you next week. Take care, everybody.
Yeah,
bye, everyone. See you next week, everybody. Take care.
Bye.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news, and views on living positively with the virus.